This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. On April 7th, Wisconsin's judicial system will be shaped by voters. Besides county court races across the state, two candidates are vying for a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Rock County Circuit Court Judge James Daly is challenging incumbent Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. She's seeking a third 10-year term on the court. I'll be talking with both candidates today. First, Justice Bradley talks about her early years in southwest Wisconsin.
I grew up in Richland Center, and I think, Maureen, many of the values I hold now that I bring to the Wisconsin Supreme Court are the same values I had growing up in Richland Center. You know, the values of being fair, the values of family, the values of hard work and service to others, and just as you suggested, those are the same values I brought when I came to La Crosse to teach high school. Those are the same values that I took with me when I went to Wausau after graduating from law school, where I was in private practice and I was a circuit court judge there for 10 years. My husband Mark and I still live in Wausau. We raised our four children there, and those are the values. Good old Richland Center, hometown values, are the same values I hope we passed on to our four children.
You've been a Supreme Court justice for 19 years now. Why is it that you want to continue being a justice?
I care deeply about the people of this state, and I think it's over 5.7 million people that call Wisconsin home. When I am sitting on the Supreme Court, I really feel that I'm standing up for the people of Wisconsin. I feel that to my core. I think the people of this state deserve a justice who is fair, who's impartial, who's willing to make the tough decisions, to call it like you see it. And I've been, I think, that kind of voice for the last 20 years. I have a proven record of my decisions reflect a strong presence with regard to upholding individual rights, of having government that is open and accessible, and also having government that's accountable. So those are some of the things that I think about when I have made the decision to run for this third term for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. You know, I've had the honor of serving on this court for 20 years, and I believe that I've enjoyed strong support from people around the state. Just recently, we announced that I have over 100 chiefs of police and sheriffs from all corners of the state who are endorsing my reelection. And yesterday afternoon, released that the strong bipartisan support that we continue to have. Sue Ann Thompson, a former Republican First Lady, is supporting my reelection, along with Democrat Congressman Ron Kind, right from this area. We also have Dale Schultz from Richland Center, my hometown, and the hometown or where my opponent lives, the state senator there, Tim Cullen, a Democrat, is backing my reelection. So I bring all of that to this race.
How does a Supreme Court justice remain fair, impartial? How do you explain that to people, and how do you put your own personal opinions aside when it comes to making a decision on a case?
I think that this race, in part, is about that very question. You want to make sure that you don't have judges who are judges with agendas, right? When people come to court, they want a fair shake. They want to make sure that their friends who come to court, their relatives, their sons and daughters who come to court get a fair shake. So the question is, how do you remain fair and impartial? And one thing is you have to guard against any kind of agenda. I think that right now what we see, and as I travel around the state, people express some concern about, for instance, outside, out-of-state special interest money coming into judicial campaigns.
Which has happened more and more over recent campaigns.
Happening more and more over recent campaigns. In fact, Wisconsin, unfortunately, has been the subject of a lot of out-of-state special interest money And it's been reported that there will be special interest money coming into this race in support of my opponent. And I say and have said, no, I can't control special interests. They will do what they do. But regardless of how much money they spend against me, I'm not backing down. I'm putting my trust in the voters. I believe strongly that these out-of-state special interest groups with unknown agendas, undisclosed donors with unlimited money, is a real problem for our court system, fundamentally, as I do believe also the injection of partisan politics into the judiciary is a real problem and into judicial campaigns. You know, when I ran in 1995, there I was, a young circuit court judge from Wausau, and I ran against very able competition. Two of the opponents in that race are now justices who were subsequently elected to the court. I won in 1995, but I won with strong bipartisan support. The reason you want to keep politics out of the judiciary is the same reason you want to keep out-of-state special interest money out of judicial campaigns, is that it comes with agendas. When I ran in 1995, I had the chair of the Republican Party and Democratic Party in Marathon County, where I live, supporting me, as well as the chair of the Republican Party and Democratic Party in Langlade County, in Lincoln County, in Portage County, in Wood County. All of those counties in north central Wisconsin where people know me the best. And also the chair of the Democratic Party and former chair of the Republican Party in La Crosse County, where I taught high school. I remember after I won that election in 1995, the Journal Sentinel reporter, the morning after, had this in the article. He said, if she said it once, she said it 1,000 times, keep partisan politics out of the judiciary. I believed that then, and I believe it just as strongly today. My opponent sees it differently, however, I think. But I don't. I believe that to my core. And I think most people in this state want to keep partisan politics out of the judiciary also.
But when it comes to campaign finance, at this point you've outraised your opponent. Mm-hmm. Your campaign's raised about over $375,000, and Judge Daley has raised about $129,000 mm-hmm. up to this point. So even though you're critical of money in elections, you're still out fundraising him, and you still have a big pot of money.
Look at the donors that reflect those numbers.
Lots of attorneys.
There are some attorneys, but there are lots of people from around the state. Virtually no out-of-state money. There is some, but it's, as we say in the law, de minimis, hardly any. Don't tell them, oh, I shouldn't say this, but I think one is from a boyfriend of about 50 years ago. May the record reflect. But other than that, the money's from people, hardworking people in Wisconsin from all sorts of professions, business and labor, attorneys, people that are, as I would say, old and young, fat and thin, and people of all political persuasions. So I'm very proud of the fundraising that we've accomplished and the people from whom we've received support.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guest today is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. She's up for re-election on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. The election is on April 7th. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on what makes not just a good Supreme Court justice, but a great Supreme Court justice in Wisconsin.
Dedication and passion for the rule of law. Dedication to our system of justice and passion about the importance of the third branch of government and that it remain a branch that is fair and impartial. And I'll tell you why. The judicial branch depends on its legitimacy, on the public trust and confidence of the people. unlike the legislative branch, where you have under the Constitution the power of the purse, or the executive branch, the power of the militia, we have only the public trust and confidence of the people that gives us our currency, so to speak, gives us our legitimacy. And someone who's dedicated to that premise makes a good, dare I say, verging on better than good. You use the term great. But that describes me. That is someone who's dedicated her life to the system of justice, the rule of law. I do that not only in this state, as I travel around the state. You know, I've been to all corners of the state talking about the importance of the rule of law. I've won a national judicial award, a very prestigious award for doing that. I do that now with the program started by former U.S. Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. She started a program after she left the United States Supreme Court to promote civics education. And the reason for that is because she would have seminars, she would have conferences about the importance of the rule of law and an independent judiciary. And she realized, Maureen, she realized that when she was talking to people about the important function of the third branch of government, making sure it's neutral, making sure it's impartial, making sure it's independent, people didn't know independent from what. So she said the answer for her, and she asked me to be a co-chair here in the state for her program, is to make sure people understand the importance of the rule of law. Independent from what? When their poll was done, at the time she started this program, only one-third of all of the people polled could name the three branches of government. And so independent third branch of government is something that I think I've dedicated my life to. I believe in. I teach not only in this state, but nationally and internationally. I serve on international judicial boards. I'm the vice chair of the International Judicial Academy. I've dedicated my life and am committed to the importance of the rule of law and taught it to judges from around the world and leaders in emerging nations. If you look at me, you know, and those who know me know, that I believe strongly in the importance of the third branch of government and people understanding the role of the courts.
Well, your opponent, Rock County Circuit Court Judge James Daly, has argued that you are an activist judge, and he looks towards your decisions on voter ID and Act 10 and whatnot. Do you agree with that concept that you are an activist judge?
Well, I think labels are easy and almost at times way too convenient and distorting. Again, I talk about former U.S. Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, because she says this about this label that people toss around, talking
about the activist judge label?
This activist judge label. She says that what they really are saying is they just don't agree with your decision. And I think she hit the nail right on the head. That's exactly what they're talking about. I mean, is it an activist judge when I am the first one to write an opinion upholding the constitutionality of the sexual predator law in Wisconsin? Is that activist? Is it activist when I affirm a termination of parental rights case? Is that activist? Is it activist when I say under the Constitution that a particular area of free speech must be upheld? Is that activist? So I think Sandra Day O'Connor is right. The problem with though that label, I think, is that it's thrown around to politicize the court, to put the court in the center of the culture wars, rather than in any kind of examined or conscientious analysis of someone's record.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guest today is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. She's up for re-election on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. What do you think will be some of the more challenging cases that the Supreme Court will take up this year?
we're seeing more cases that touch upon the influence of technology. And it's fascinating, especially with regard to issues of GPS, the use of GPS. The issues of privacy are huge.
And like tracking.
Electronic yeah. tracking, absolutely. Contacting of telephone companies for locations of folks. The whole issue of privacy is just opening up as privacy and the individual rights kind of comes in connection with the need for the protection of the public. You know, protecting the public has always been an area that I've focused on. I mean, I think that my proven record is one of protecting the public. But these principles now are coming together with the advance of technology. You can imagine our founding fathers never thought when they drafted the Constitution about the issue of electronic monitoring, of electronic surveillance, of the advent of technology in so many different areas of law. So those, I think, are the issues that will be exciting for the court to decide, challenging also. These are tough issues involving important and complex areas of law.
You've been critical of a constitutional amendment that's making its way through the legislature currently that could change the way the Chief Justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court is selected. It would allow the justices to decide and not – it would not be the justice who's on the Supreme Court for the longest. Can you explain to listeners who aren't familiar with this what your stance is on this and why you are opposed to it?
Sure. I've been on the Supreme Court here in Wisconsin for 20 years, and as a result of that, I know and have a lot of friends on Supreme Courts in states throughout this nation. And different states select their Chief Justice in different manners, some by seniority, like we have here in Wisconsin for 126 years, some by vote of the majority of the members of the court, some by appointment by a governor or election by the people. It's right on the ballot, Chief Justice. So there are pros and cons to all of those approaches, and it is debatable. But what is not debatable, in my view, is not this underlying merits of how we do it, but really it's more of how this has come about. I think the Constitution, and this is a constitutional amendment that will be on the ballot on April 7th, along with my election on that date. In January, the legislature came in and said, we're going to put that referendum on the April 7th ballot. I think that referendum and that question is targeted at our current Chief Justice. I think they don't like her decisions.
You think it's personal?
I think that they don't like her decisions. I think that the Constitution, what are constitutional amendments for? The Constitution is a sacred document. And to use the Constitution as a tool to settle political scores is wrong. So regardless of the merits, the pros and cons of the different ways that you select a justice, that's not the genesis of my opposition. Misusing the Constitution for political purposes is wrong. That's why I'm against the constitutional amendment.
Finally, I want to ask you just about the current state of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Obviously, people probably remember about 4 years ago, there was quite a bit of tension going on. Justice David Prosser was accused of putting his hands around your neck. The Wisconsin Judicial Commission then filed ethics complaint against him, and you, Justice Prosser, and three others declined to hear this ethics case. And so it's been sort of just sitting there. Your opponent in the upcoming race has proposed having another state's high court hearing this ethics case. I know there's some disagreement as to whether or not that could actually be legal, but I'm wondering what you think at this point in time, if this is something that can be handled, or is this just a dead issue?
Well, I don't think that this re-election is about Justice Prosser's actions or even the three charges of misconduct brought against him by the Judicial Commission. I think this election is about the future of the Wisconsin Supreme Court and who has the proven track record and experience to be the kind of justice that the people of this state want and need. That's what this election is about. I travel around the state, and few people are talking about the Judicial Commission's complaint against Justice Prosser. You also ask about my opponent's suggestion that this the Judicial Commission case against Justice Prosser could be referred to another state Supreme Court for resolution. Everything that I have read from legal experts around the country that have been asked about that say that that's a legal non-starter. There is no jurisdiction in another state.
It would be unprecedented, correct?
Well, it's not a matter of unprecedented. Okay. It's impossible.
Okay.
I mean, it's not that there's no precedent. There is no precedent because it's not possible.
Okay.
We cannot, as a state, confer jurisdiction on Minnesota in a case. In fact, one legal expert out of the University of Indiana said, additionally, the fact that if you think that Minnesota taxpayers want to spend money and precious judicial resources solving Wisconsin's cases, you're wrong. But it isn't just a matter of practicality. There is no jurisdiction. They have no authority. It is under our Constitution. It is the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the Wisconsin Supreme Court alone that has authority to discipline judges. So, in fact, I was surprised that he would come up with an idea that is really impossible under the law.
Justice Anne Walsh Bradley is seeking her third 10-year term on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Election day is April 7th. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Next, we'll hear from Justice Bradley's challenger, longtime Rock County Circuit Court Judge James Daly.
I've been a circuit court judge for 26 years in Rock County. Before that, I was elected three terms as district attorney in Rock County. Also, bringing to the table 36 years of military experience, including enlisted service as a Marine infantryman in Vietnam. I retired from Wisconsin Army National Guard as a brigadier general. My wife, Shirley, is 45 years, and we raised four daughters in Jeansville, and two of whom also served in the military, one in the Marine Corps, one in the United States Army. I guess that's a thumbnail.
And so why is it now that you want to move from the county level to the state level now and become a justice on the state Supreme Court?
Well, I think I bring to the table certain things in contrast to my opponent. Number one, I'm not a judicial activist. I believe the Constitution has meaning, and I believe that, in fact, the role of the justice is defined by the Constitution, and we must give deference to the other branches of government who also have constitutional authorities that they exercise. I don't think that's been done in the past, and I believe it's time for change.
And I'm wondering about that idea of a judicial activist, because I had asked Justice Bradley if she could respond to that term as well. Do you see this as an issue with just her, or do you see this as a widespread issue within the Supreme Court?
I believe it's an issue on a philosophy. I believe that the Constitution and the role of a justice is to apply the law and to make decisions based upon the law and based the rule of law and based upon the Constitution. Activists believe that, in fact, they've been put on the bench to correct the errors, policy mistakes of the other branches of government. And I don't think that's our role unless it is rises to the constitutional level. And I believe that, in fact, activists step over the line that they shouldn't step over. They don't give deference to the branches of government, which I think is absolutely important under our constitutional system.
So I think when the average person hears that, they think, well, everyone has opinions, even if you are a judge. Can you explain to people how it is that as a justice, as a judge, you're able to remain neutral and really just follow the law and not let those biases creep into your decision making?
Certainly. It's every judge in Wisconsin at circuit level and above enforces laws that they may not personally agree with. But my personal opinion, my individual agenda, or partisan politics should not stand in the way of making the decision based upon the law and the Constitution. Like I say, we all enforce laws we may not agree with personally, but that's not the question. The question is whether or not it's within the authority of the legislature to create that law and whether the way it's implemented is constitutional.
I'm wondering if you can maybe give people a little insight, too, is how you sort of analyze those decisions, you know, whether discussing things over with other fellow judges or with your staff, but just how you come to make certain decisions and analyze the law as it stands.
Well, for justice, the only ones who you discuss the matter with really is your peers, bench. The decision has got to be based upon the law and the Constitution, and if you wish to change the law, which may be in the authority of the court to change the law, the question is, should it be changed, and why are we changing it? The answer is, well, I don't like the decision made by the legislature. That isn't particularly within that's why I say you've got to put your own personal beliefs, your own personal agendas, your own belief in whatever party you may belong to as an individual to decide and decide the case simply upon the law and upon the facts presented before you and based upon the law and the Constitution make a decision.
So what is it that you think makes a really great, not just a good, but a great Supreme Court justice in Wisconsin?
I think that's the one who can bridge the differences between the various disparate opinions on the bench and to work towards a consensus. You know, you can always disagree, and you're going to disagree. In fact, we want disagreement on the Supreme Court and a robust discussion to come to the right decision through testing of your own ideas in your own belief or understanding of the law through discussion, then in fact, you may change your opinion or you may change your position. But just because you disagree, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to necessarily change your opinion, but you can reach a consensus. And ultimately, the consensus is what you're trying to do, build consensus upon the Supreme Court to get the right decision.
Do you see yourself as someone who could be that bridge?
I believe I can. I'm not connected to either side, frankly, and I don't like the dynamics which I've observed both in the decisions, the language of the decisions, and also in the reported incidents on the bench. And I do think that while people should disagree, they don't have to be disagreeable or disagree.
You know, and I want to go back to that a little bit. When I talked with Justice Bradley, she said, you know, obviously the different justices in the Wisconsin Supreme Court, they have work to do when it comes to maybe getting along a little better. You know, is that something that really is important when it comes down to the end of the day, when it comes to decision making, or should personal matters not matter at all?
Personal matters shouldn't matter at all. Very frankly, the decisions that the Supreme Court makes affects everybody's lives at one level or another. Whether it's a decision like the lead paint decision, where the result of the decision meant some Wisconsin people lost their jobs, or cases in which you've cut out another exception or another offense or obstacle for law enforcement, which affects the ability to protect our families. The decisions that they make are important. The language you use in disagreeing, public language, is important also. If you can focus on the facts of the case and your policy disagreements or legal disagreements as opposed to personal disagreements, there's just entirely too much personal stuff going on, even in the language in the decisions.
So, Judge Daley, when you look at some of the cases that the state Supreme Court could be seeing within the next year or two, what do you think are some of the most challenging cases?
One never knows. there are things that are being done in the state in the other branches of government which may end up before the Supreme Court. But I want to see, you know, the critical question is, how is it going to appear before the Supreme Court? what are the facts that they carry with them, and therefore, what is the law that you have to apply in the case? The how it appears before the Supreme Court and the facts it brings with it, as deduced from at the trial court level, those are important. So I really can't say what are going to be the big things that come before us. It's hard to say, and I really can't tell you which way I'd fall on things I don't know are going to be before us.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, my guest is Rock County Circuit Court Judge James Daly. He's running for a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
One thing that's always interesting during judicial races or Supreme Court races is how one candidate or the other may say that they are the most tough on crime. And I'm curious what your thoughts are when it comes to how the Supreme Court deals with, you know, quote-unquote traditional crime like murder, rape, robbery, because obviously there are many other cases that the Supreme Court hears besides crime.
And the fact of the matter is the Supreme Court doesn't decide the facts of the case. That's at the lower level, whether a jury or a judge makes a decision. But the important thing is, what do you do with it? I've seen the use of the what is known as the new federalism. In other words, the Supreme Court has ruled in the past, and you know, 8 or 10 years ago, in a series of cases, which expanded the rights of the defendants under our state constitution, that expanded far, far more than is contained under the U.S. Constitution, and it's been problematic. And the question is, why were the tests changed in those cases? Why is it? Why are we expanding the rights of the defendants when we should be looking at protecting the public?
I'm wondering if you can expand on that a little more. Why do you see maybe that shift as problematic?
Well, the shift is problematic in cases like State versus Knapp. State versus Knapp was a case of Jefferson County in which the Supreme Court ruled that because of what they perceived as a violation of the Miranda warnings, they were going to suppress evidence. That's usually not a Fifth Amendment, but a Fourth Amendment remedy, fruit of the poisonous tree. The Attorney General took that up the U.S. Constitution, who summarily reversed the case. It was a homicide case. And sent it back to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, advising them to look at a specific case, U.S. versus Patain, which dealt with the same issue. In other words, you don't have to suppress evidence for a violation of Fifth Amendment violation of Miranda. Our Supreme Court then said, well, we are going to have the same result because we're going to expand the rights of the defendants under the Wisconsin Constitution. And the result was suppression of the key evidence which convicted the person of a homicide. Now, that is problematic for me. We'd always follow the U.S. law, the U.S. Supreme Court, in the Fifth Amendment area. Now, in this case, we expanded the rights of the defendant to suppress evidence farther than the U.S. Supreme Court has done. So it's a problem to me.
But I want to ask you quickly about just a couple of issues that you have mentioned in the media, but in case people who are listening haven't read those other stories yet. You are a supporter of Wisconsin's voter ID law, which is something that could end up coming before the U.S. Supreme Court sometime this year.
That's correct. It probably will be. But the Wisconsin Supreme Court has found it constitutional under our constitution.
And another issue that obviously is making a lot of headlines is the constitutional amendment that could potentially change the way that the Chief Justice is selected within the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I'm wondering if you can tell people just your thoughts on this matter.
Sure. I'm a guy that likes democracy. I think it's a great idea. All the constitutional amendment does is permits a vote for the justices to determine who will be their Chief Justice. It gives them the ability to determine who the Chief Justice should be to represent them, the courts, before the other branches of government and the public, and also who will actually run the judicial system under our Constitution. I think it's a good idea. We're only one of five states that has the seniority, uses seniority to determine who the Supreme Court justice is. I think it's a good idea to have the members of the court to vote themselves to determine who that should be.
And regarding the ethics issue that went before and happened in the Supreme Court a few years ago, you've made the suggestion that maybe that should be heard out of state since most of the Supreme Court justices don't want to participate in it. Others have argued that's impossible. We can't move that out of state. So is that something you would try to push for? Or is there any way to even settle this judicial ethics matter?
It's a great question. I did not say that it should be taken to have someone else decide it. I said that the fact-finding should be done by someone who is not involved in the matter. There cannot be a witness in the matter. Most or all of the justices were witnesses to the particular event. So what you're needing is someone to determine what the facts are so our Supreme Court could make a decision on the ethics violation. As it is, it's still hanging out there. You know, I don't think it's good that it's still hanging out there. It should be decided one way or the other.
Sure. And then finally, when it comes to campaign financing for Supreme Court races in Wisconsin, obviously this is an issue that has really changed over the years. Justice Bradley has raised a lot more money than your campaign, but she's also been raising these, I don't know, she's just been talking about how a lot of special interest money is going to start rolling in soon on behalf of your campaign. Is that something that you want to talk about at all? Or do you want to talk about the money, the role of money in elections?
Well, the limits are set by the legislature, and it's not within, you know, I'll live with whatever limits they decide, they determine. The Justice Bradley has certainly raised more than I have, and that's probably expected since she is a sitting justice. However, much or majority of her money is raised by some of the special interest groups, such as lawyers. And that's you can look at it as special interest money, or you can look at it just concerned citizens. I'll live within whatever limit they set. It's one of those things that you're not within my competency to decide. And if the legislature says the limits are X amount of dollars, well, I'll live with that.
Are you expecting more money to roll in towards as the election approaches?
I would certainly hope so.
Judge Daly, is there anything else that you want to talk about or any other issue that you want people to know about you before the April election?
No, I have a lot of experience at working with diverse people to achieve common goals. They have both in helping to establish the Criminal Justice Advisory Committee in Rock County. I've created as presiding judge in Rock County, three diversion courts, including the first Veterans Diversion Court in Wisconsin. So I bring some things to the table that the other members of the court may not have, some insight. And I certainly have been able to, throughout my experience in the military, work with diverse people to accomplish goals that we mutually set. So I guess that's what I think of that.
Rock County Circuit Court Judge James Daly is challenging two-term Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. The victor of the April 7th election will spend 10 years as a state Supreme Court Justice. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up, a La Crosse attorney talks about the significance of state Supreme Court races, and despite a historically low turnout for such races, why more people should care. Visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers, to hear full interviews from the Wisconsin Supreme Court candidates. There, you'll also find links to this episode and other recent editions of Newsmakers. And if you'd like to share comments or make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows and photos, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. While Wisconsin Supreme Court races have become more political in recent years, there is still little interest from the average voter in the race. If one in five eligible voters casts a ballot on April 7th, that would be considered a normal turnout.
Joining us to talk about these issues is La Crosse attorney Keith Belzer, who specializes in criminal defense and also teaches a course on American law at UW-La Crosse. Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis asked Belzer what the Wisconsin Supreme Court does.
Well, the Supreme Court has two roles. One role is to review legislation and make sure that it is constitutional within the framework of the Wisconsin Constitution. The second role they have is to review cases that come up and see how they fit within the framework of case law that's already been established, a concept called stare decisis, meaning that any case that's already come before, cases decided subsequent to that, should be decided consistently with the prior case.
Wisconsin justices are elected to 10-year terms in nonpartisan spring elections. Now, given how political many of these races have been the last 20 years in the state, is it time to allow justices, do you think, to be appointed by someone else, either the governor or a body that the governor or legislature would designate?
Well, I think that there are challenges for any system of determining who a Supreme Court justice will be at the state level. And the voting end, there is this issue about it really no longer being partisan. For the last couple of judicial Supreme Court races, it's been a very partisan election with lots of outside money, as much as $1 million they're predicting this year, coming in from special interest groups to try to swing the election either towards the liberal candidate or the conservative candidate. One option would be to have some sort of an appointment process. On the other hand, that's open to politics as well. I mean, if you don't like who the particular governor is at the time of an appointment, you're going to be unhappy with that selection. You're going to think that that's been biased. I mean, one possibility that some states do is that they have like a blue ribbon panel that will then present maybe a series of three candidates to a governor to pick from. The panel is made up of people from both sides of the political spectrum to try to get somebody who really is qualified as opposed to politically connected.
There's been really no talk of doing that in Wisconsin, has there?
I've never heard of anything suggesting we do anything except to keep going as we have been, which is to do elections every 10 years, which, again, become increasingly more and more partisan.
Have you ever argued a case before the court?
I've never been in front of the Supreme Court.
As an attorney, does the tone that we're seeing in these races in recent years bother you?
I've been very disappointed in the campaigns for Wisconsin Supreme Court in the last couple of races, and I anticipate that this one will be similar, in that it becomes all about a political message, not about qualifications, not about experience, not about intellect, wisdom, the types of things you generally would look for in a Supreme Court justice. The campaigns focus on things that I think are borderline unethical. Looking at particular cases out of context, looking at decisions that were made based on a constitutional issue and trying to then say that they were fact-based. And this comes from both sides.
We haven't seen the special interest money start to flow in the race yet, but we very well could in the next week or so.
I would absolutely expect we're going to start to see a lot of money flow into both races.
Really, the candidates don't have any control over that, though, do they, in theory?
They don't. I think that they could have more control over the message of the advertisements than they claim to have. But they don't have control over outside money buying ad space.
And really, that's something the U.S. Supreme Court has weighed in and made a decision on, isn't it?
Well, certainly the United States Supreme Court has made a decision that's considered controversial at best, allowing corporations to be seen as people with a First Amendment right to essentially spend as much money as they want on any campaign.
Should judicial races be held to a higher standard, though?
Well, I certainly think so. I mean, I'd like to think that the Supreme Court justices in any particular state, but in our state of Wisconsin, should be the best and the brightest minds in the legal field. And my hope is that that's what we're deciding when we vote. But the voting process really doesn't look at something as, I think, subtle as an intellect, as an ability to weigh decisions, to look at ramifications, things of that nature.
Do these recent races, Supreme Court justice candidates are running, call into your mind a question of fairness once they go out to decide constitutional law in Wisconsin?
Well, there's always the question or the perception, perhaps, of impropriety. And it doesn't necessarily have to exist. It's the perception. If you have a group of people putting in a wild amount of money to help get somebody elected, and then, you know, that group has members in it that appear in front of the Supreme Court, that's not to say the Supreme Court justice wouldn't be honest or wouldn't be ethical or wouldn't be fair, but it certainly makes you wonder. And if we don't have faith in the decisions of the Supreme Court, then the whole legal system starts to feel a little shaky.
I'm sure you've heard the term judicial activism bandied about quite a bit in these races. What comes to your mind when you hear the term judicial activism, and how do you define it, and is there room for that word in political races?
The term judicial activism came around essentially around the year 2000 or so in the races since then. There was a movement that started in the South to try to affect judicial races from the circuit court level, but particularly up to the Supreme Court level. And there became a sort of phrase, a catchphrase of judicial activists, which came to mean, as used, liberal judges who were legislating from the bench, who were trying to bring in their own sense of morality or conscience to the bench in their decisions. We can look back as far as Brown versus Board of Education to look at a case that could be considered judicial activism. On the one hand, that case wasn't decided by something that was written in the original Constitution. On the other hand, it was decided by principles that are articulated in the Constitution with regard to equal rights for all. More recently, the question of same-gender marriage. There's nowhere in the United States Constitution is there any wording about same-gender marriage. It's simply not there. On the other hand, a little bit more broader reading of the Constitution arguably says that it falls under equal protection. So that's really where that all comes from, this idea of judicial activism versus a strict constructionist would be the other side of the coin, somebody who looks at the plain meaning of the Constitution and decides simply based on the words as originally written. The reality is both sides use these terms when it suits them. Neither side is immune to becoming broader in their interpretation of the Constitution or more narrow when it fits their particular politics.
In your mind, should the law be allowed to evolve?
The law has to evolve. I mean, one of the challenges for the law is that it's oftentimes slow to evolve. Cases regarding slavery. The legal system was way behind society. Many would argue that cases regarding, again, same-sex marriage, that the legal system was a ways behind the rest of society. You want the law to be somewhat flexible. On the other hand, the legislators are the ones that are truly elected to bring forth laws that reflect where the community is at the time. So I think it's a fine balance between the law sort of reflecting changing values and opinions versus the legislator enacting laws that reflect that change.
In addition to the state Supreme Court justice race on April 7th, there is also a constitutional amendment on the ballot that would allow the state Supreme Court to decide who the chief justice is instead of the system we have now. Could you explain the system we have now and sure. How long it's been in place?
As far as how long it's been in place, I think it's been in place since we've had a Supreme Court. But the Wisconsin Supreme Court has the Chief Justice a position that you run for and you're elected into. So in other words, Chief Justice Abramson has been the Chief Justice for years and years and years. The constitutional amendment would allow the sitting justices all to vote on who the Chief Justice should be. I don't think anybody would deny that this really is aimed at particularly Chief Justice Abramson. She is part of essentially a two-person minority on the Supreme Court right now that are considered liberal. The fact that she's been a Chief Justice throughout this time, I think, was seen as undesirable to more conservative elements.
And do you think it's needed in Wisconsin to make that change?
I don't actually have a thoughtful opinion about that, John. Yeah. I think with the Chief Justices, it doesn't mean a whole lot.
Most of these justice races we've seen have extremely low voter turnout. They're nonpartisan. Spring races, if you get 20%, that's considered high turnout. Why should they be viewed as more important, do you think?
Well, the state Supreme Court is the third branch of government. And a lot of people, I don't think, realize that it is just as powerful as the legislative branch or the executive branch. You know, look at the cases that have gone up before the Supreme Court just in the last couple of years. Cases on unions, right? Cases on voter identification, cases on health care. I mean, all of these types of cases are going up to the Wisconsin Supreme Court in one form or another. They also look at protections that are afforded us by the Wisconsin Constitution, whether that has to do with rights of privacy, whether it has to do with due process, equal protection. In some ways, the Wisconsin Constitution has broader protections for its citizens than the United States Constitution. These are the people that we're electing to keep those protections in place.
Keith Belzer is a criminal defense attorney in La Crosse and teaches a course on American law at UW-La Crosse. He talked with Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis about issues related to the politics of Wisconsin's Supreme Court. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and photos, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.